Dream telepathy, as the name suggests, is the ability to consciously or unconsciously communicate with fellow humans while sleeping and in a dream state. This concept of dream telepathy is not a new one. Over the years, many famous scientists have tried to understand this mysterious phenomenon, such as Sigmund Freud, who attempted to understand the implications of dream telepathy on psychoanalytical thought. On multiple occasions, he accepted the influence of telepathic ideas on the human thought process. Carl Jung believed in the telepathic hypothesis without question, and even developed a theoretical system to explain paranormal events of this nature. It was none other than Nikola Tesla who once said, "The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all of the previous centuries of its existence." According to Dr. Stanley Krippner, professor of psychology at Saybrook University in California, and I quote, "A wealth of anecdotal and clinical material exists which supports the possibility of telepathic effects occurring in dreams. However, an experimental approach to the topic did not become possible until the psychophysiological laboratory technology became available. It was discovered that sleeping research participants awakened from periods of rapid eye movement activity were frequently able to recall dream episodes. As a result, it was possible to request a, quote, telepathic receiver to attempt dreaming about a target stimulus that was being focused on in a distant location from a telepathic sender." In the mid-1960s, Montague Ullman began a series of experiments to test if humans could be made to dream selectively about randomly picked material. In other words, they could choose what they wanted to dream about before going to sleep, and this could include anything, from artwork to movies to photographs and more. Soon after these experiments began, people all across the world began to take interest, and the experiments required that the sender and receiver, who were made to meet just before sleep, were then made to sleep in separate rooms. So the telepathic sender had an envelope waiting for them in the room in which they'd sleep, and it would contain something like a picture or a drawing, and the receivers were then purposely awakened shortly after their REM or rapid eye movement sleep began, so the researchers could take a dream report. These experiments continued for more than 10 years, and they yielded significant results. There is in fact some level of dream telepathy even among total strangers. Although we're still not able to articulate how and why the telepathy works, there is convincing evidence that the phenomenon exists. The study of quantum physics has shed light on the vast interconnectedness of everything in the universe. One possible explanation is quantum entanglement. For example, consider two electrons that are created together. If you send one to the other side of the universe, the other will respond instantly, regardless of their distance from each other. This is one way of interpreting how everything is really connected in some way. Einstein called it spooky actions at a distance. So with the growing understanding of subjects like quantum physics, we've discovered that there are vast interconnections between almost everything, or all matter, in the known universe, but we're still not able to understand exactly how two minds, or seemingly separate consciousnesses, are somehow connected in dreams, where reality seems to occupy another dimension, or one that is different from the reality of the waking world, yet shares a quantum interconnection.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today we are going to explore dream telepathy. With me is Professor Stanley Krippner, who is the co-author of the classic book, Dream Telepathy, co-authored with Montague Ullman and Alan Vaughan. I think the first thing it's worth saying is that there is a history of folklore and mythology about people having psychic and telepathic experiences in their dreams. It goes back for thousands of years, so it would make sense to try and research it experimentally.
Well, that's true. And my dear colleague, Montague Ullman, was an active psychoanalyst for many years, and having had some ostensible psychic experiences himself when he was a young man.
Some very dramatic ones.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He wanted to see if he could bring this into a laboratory setting. This was about the time that rapid eye movement sleep was discovered at the University of Chicago. And so he took the technology of monitoring sleep, watching for the rapid eye movements, and then waking up people and asking them if they could identify a picture that was in another room or a picture that somebody was focusing upon. By the way, his original participant was the famous medium Eileen Garrett, who later became a friend of mine as well. And
who founded the Parapsychology Foundation.
She founded the Parapsychology Foundation some 65 years ago. It's still going strong. Mm-hmm. And I've been fortunate enough to become friends with her daughter and her granddaughter. So the whole generation is something that I've been able to embellish my life with all of these years. Eileen Garrett had a dream about a chariot race, a team of black horses, white horses, racing against each other. And she said, this is very much like the scene from Ben-Hur, which I read about in a novel many years ago. And now I hear that it's being made into a movie, and I want to see the movie. Well, the picture, which was in a sealed envelope in a distant room, was a glassy still from the famous movie Ben-Hur. Charlton Heston is the star. Mm-hmm. And so what can we say? She hit the nail right on the head.
A magnificent hit, and certainly enough to inspire a research laboratory such as the Dream Laboratory at Maimonides Hospital to pursue that line of inquiry for years.
And so we did literally a couple of hundreds of experiments. All of them have been published, even the non-significant ones, and then they coalesced in the book Dream Telepathy, written with Alan Vaughan, who is a science writer, and that is the book that you just mentioned.
Yes.
And, of course, that is a popular book. It's no comparison to the scientific articles. And once again, Montague Ullman and myself, Charles Otterton, who later joined us, several other assistants who joined us, came up with over 100 articles published in psychiatric and psychological and medical journals over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I would be the last one to say that we've absolutely demonstrated dream telepathy. All that I can say is you can make a case for dream telepathy based on our experiments, based on the experiments that did replicate our work. But you know, I think that there is another value in our work that many people tend to overlook. After our work came out and became knowledgeable in psychiatric circles, having dreams about other people, having dreams about the future, having dreams about distant events, no longer became, on the face of it, a prime symptom for schizophrenia and other mental disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that came to our laboratory were not psychotic people. They weren't even borderline. They were, you know, ordinary people in fairly good mental health. And so the position that these types of, what shall we say, anomalous or puzzling dreams could no longer be justified as being by itself a symptom of poor mental health.
Ancient cultures were aware of how the brain could be entrained through sound repetition, and how consistent, rhythmic sound had extremely powerful healing and spiritual benefits, aiding in the achievement of a trance-like state of consciousness. Through the use of repetitive drumming and chanting, Tibetan monks, Native American shamans, Hindu healers, and master yogis have been able to induce specific brainwave states for transcending consciousness, healing, and concentration and other spiritual growth. Scientists have conducted research on the drum beats used during rituals of ancient cultures and found that they generally beat at a steady rate of 4.5 beats per second. This consistent beat induces a trance-like state for the entire tribe due to the brain shifting into a 4.5 beats per second brainwave frequency, which is a low theta brainwave state. The way binaural beats work was first described in 1839 by a Prussian physicist and meteorologist named Heinrich Wilhelm Dove. The word binaural means having or relating to two ears, and the process works by simultaneously sending a marginally different sound frequency into each ear, usually through headphones.
Right, we'll be careful on the electrodes now.
At the Monroe Institute in Virginia, yeah. Carol Sabick is preparing for a flight beyond her body.
Need to hook these wires up to the amplifier here. Okay, does that feel comfortable for you like that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right.
She's being launched by consciousness researcher Skip Atwater.
Okay, Carol, if you're ready now, I'm going to turn the lights out. And we're ready to begin. All right, Carol, everything is looking really, really good out here. I want you to continue to relax now.
Skip Atwater is using sound and sensory deprivation to alter Carol's state of consciousness. Inside the Monroe Institute's cave-like isolation chamber, she can see nothing, feel nothing. Her only external stimulus comes from tones in her headphones. And that sound is doing something remarkable. The tones in Carol's ears are slightly out of phase, but they can't be equalized by turning her head. As a result, Carol's brain combines the sounds into a third tone, created from the difference between the original tones. This phenomenon is called binaural beating, and it's modifying Carol's brainwaves. Our state of consciousness is linked to brainwave activity, which can be measured by electroencephalograph or EEG. Carol's EEG shows strong activity below 7 cycles per second, known as theta and delta waves. These frequencies are usually associated with dreams and sleep, but Atwater says Carol's state is better described as body asleep, mind awake.
All those bright colors tell us we're getting lots of delta brain waves going on as she moves into her out-of-body experience. The states of allowing your mind to travel away from your body, or has been characterized by some as an out-of-body experience of this consciousness movement, is one that's characterized by this slow wave delta. So using the word sleep isn't really appropriate in this case, because our minds are not asleep. Our minds are open and awake to experience. Carol, come on back now. Come on back to the booth here in the lab. It's time to be ending the session. You've been gone quite a while now. Come on back. That's better. I can see that you're back now. Very good. Well, welcome back. How was your experience?
Oh, wow. I started out from here, sort of floating up through the roof of this, through the ceiling, and I went up out through the building, and I was looking at the building from up above. And then it was like I flew over the whole scenery here up to like a cabin that's up on the hill, and I was looking at the cabin from the outside. And then from there, I was out in this space. All of a sudden, I felt this being come close to me and couldn't really see it. I could just sort of feel this energy.
There is information elsewhere. There is information beyond the limitations of the physical body, beyond the limitations of our five physical senses. And it is our mind that gives us access to those things. It is our very own thoughts. It is the essence of us, the soul of us, that allows us to know these things.
My name is Robert Sepper. My published work is available on Amazon. Thank you for sharing these videos. Please don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you soon.